Hey, happy Wednesday. Dieter and Hutch here for reasons not quite known. Some stuff to get to. Jake, have you looked at 49ers Web Zone recently? Like, shouts to 49ers Web Zone. They do a really nice job of sort of aggregating all the 49ers content. And I mean, every now and again, when I'm like, you know, I haven't really thought about the 49ers all that often, or, you know, it's just not front of mind, I'm like, oh, let's go check out what's on the Web Zone, see what's going on with the 49ers. They do such a great job of aggregating all of it. And let me tell you, they could have taken the last week off. I mean, it's brutal.
No, they're relentless. Honestly, shout out to them, because I do sometimes go like, what happened? And I don't know how they do it, because sometimes I can't do it.
Legendary sickos.
Yep. Shout out to them, genuinely.
But like this week, I wish someone would have taken a vacation over there, because there is no news to report.
Like, actually,
what do you got?
There is one thing. Kyle Shanahan has a mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard about that. I'm yet to see it. I've heard about it.
Okay. Well, you marinate on what you think a Kyle Shanahan mustache would look like, and I will send you.
Yeah. What don't it share looks it like. With the audience. Let them find it out on their own. I want to find it organically via you texting me it.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
This, of course, is Kyle Shanahan's mustache, which he debuted at Christian McCaffrey's wedding. When I said there was no real news,
I'm just going to.
This is what I meant. This is what I meant. Okay, let's see this thing. This is a reactionary shot. Hold on. My phone is like rejecting the concept.
Here we go. This is what it looks like.
Oh wow, Kyle. No,
there's got to be a better way to.
No, Kyle. I mean, again, I'm telling you, you know, this is Kyle. Kyle looks like evil Gavin Newsom here.
Yeah. I'll zoom in even further.
You know,
those are the limits of our technology.
There's a lot of limits to our technology.
I don't know what to make of it. I
appreciate that he's trying out something new, mixing it up a little bit. Like, let him live his life. Let him have some fun.
I don't really have.
You know, George Kittle's still rocking the man bun like it's 2019. Kyle Shanahan's out here mixing it up. You know, credit to Kyle Juszczyk. He's got a classic look.
Yeah.
Listen. I don't know if I want to see that mustache every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and Sundays from here on out.
Right.
But that's not my call.
And he's trying to get an old-fashioned Got Milk ad, you know, with the stash.
I don't know if that has any purpose. Kyle has...
Yeah.
Kyle is an idealist, not a pragmatist. I venture to say that this is an idealistic move as opposed to a pragmatic move for Kyle Shanahan, because it's a lot of effort.
Listen,
I will say, and by the way, Kyle,
stash.
If you're an NFL head coach, unless you're Andy Reid, who's been rocking it forever, right? Unless you're Andy Reid, I'd probably avoid it, because I'm looking at Kyle Shanahan right now, evil Gavin Newsom, and I'm thinking to myself, you know who... That, you know whose stash that is? That's a Jeff Fisher stash.
Yeah.
That stash is going 7-9.
It does have a Jeff Fisher sort of je ne sais quoi to it.
It's got that salt and pepper. That's a Jeff Fisher stash.
Listen, I think it's a good look. You know, mix it up. Going to a nice wedding. Looks good. Sue looks good.
Yeah.
I want to have a stronger opinion, but...
He can pull it off. He could pull it off. I mean, I would have a stronger opinion if he couldn't pull it off, but he can. Yeah. And I don't think he looks like Dale Earnhardt Sr. or anything, but you know, if he needs a Jeff Fisher mustache to get through this season, Godspeed.
Yeah. And that's the 49ers corner. That is all the 49ers.
Look at what Brandon Ayuk is doing to this man. He's clearly going through something. Man. It just seems like Brandon Ayuk's the only one going through anything. I don't even want to talk about it.
I was just about to say, there's nothing new. I think a deal just will probably get done or not. We'll see. I just realized for the first time that you also have a Bernie and scarf behind you. For those of you sickos, I also have a Hibs scarf. Yeah.
You have a Hibs
from
scarf
Scotland.
Up the
I have a Hibs scarf. Yeah, I went one time in
Easter Road.
Yes, Easter Road. It's great.
When this podcast hits big, which we're still waiting, there's part of me that wants to just take my incredibly large sum of money, which inevitably will come my way, and just buy Hibs. Just buy Hibs.
Yeah.
Hibs isn't a big enough team. Like, it's going to cost a nice amount of money. I'm not pretending as if I really, I could literally right now buy Forest Mechanics FC, which is the soccer team closest to where my wife grew up in the north of Scotland. Like, I could buy them.
Right.
And I could hold on to, I can run that team from a very far distance away in the Scottish fifth division. I can do it. I don't want to. I would rather buy Hibs.
Honestly, my dream job, you know, people ask, like, what's your dream job? You know, like, you know, and kids grow up, they're like, I want to be president. I want to be an astronaut. It's like, no, I want to manage a fourth tier English team.
No, you don't.
And work them up. And I don't want them to get promoted to the Premier League. I just want to dominate the championship and finish fourth every year and lose year after
year
in the playoffs.
Eighth in the playoff.
Yeah, I don't need Premier League money. I don't want that. I just want to be in the championship, gutting it out every year.
I think when they offer you the £50 million, you'll be like, you know what? I'm pretty interested in that. I'm willing to take a year and try that out.
We'll go to the Prem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you'll have us.
If you'll have us.
So, yeah, Hibs. My buddy Sam Chandler, who did the art for this show or the previous show, was able to get that for me. Apparently, it was a real pain in the ass, unless you're Jake Hutchinson here. So
yeah, unless you go.
You want to talk about my Hold Steady and New Pornographers poster while we're at it? What about my laundry hamper?
It was either that or we go into U.S. men's national team that flamed out. No, there's nothing really to say.
They're the Hibs of national teams.
It's, yeah, brutal. Exactly. Didn't play well enough. Incredible refereeing. But that's not why they got
CONCACAFed. I will say, while we're just talking about backgrounds and stuff, Jake has done a wonderful job of setting up his background. All of that. Congratulations on the girlfriend. Yeah. I have been moved multiple times in my own home. And I'm going to get moved again, I'm pretty sure here, relegated to the basement of my house. Okay? There was a point when I bought my house that I had a big office to myself. And then my wife is like, this is mine now. And so then I went into the guest bedroom. And then we renovated the house. And the guest bedroom became our bedroom. So I had no office. And that went great because I just didn't do any work for you. No, now it is both guest bedroom and my office. So I am committing one of the cardinal sins of podcasting. Our friends at the What Chaos Show like said, it's like, if you have a bed in your shot when you're podcasting, you poor. Now there's a difference between Bay Area poor, and, you know,
right?
You know, Cleveland, Ohio. No offense to Cleveland, Ohio, but this game ain't
some offense.
I mean, a little offense. We'd all like to flee to the Cleve. Regardless,
shout out to Joakim Noah, who has the meanest quote of all time to Cleveland. Look it up.
No one
look it up. Continue.
In Cleveland is, I believe,
yeah,
the quote. Yeah, amongst so many other words. I've always kind of been like a little bit peeved when my man Pete Blackburn said, like, if you have a bed in your shot, you're poor. And I'm like, God damn it! Like, I have worked my ass off, and yet I still have this testament to my poverty here. But guess what? I mean, in a not too distant future, I'm getting kicked out of this room too, and I'm going to be in the basement, and it's going to be like a Peloton, some free weights, my rack, infrared sauna.
Listen, man, I've got roommates. I've got a dog who's lying on my bed back there.
Yeah,
you know, there's
maybe
no shame.
The dog cancels it out. Moose doesn't want to even be in the room with me. As you can tell, we have
Bruce
a lot
is over.
To talk
He's
about.
Like, enough of the takes, please. It's too
Jesus
hot.
Fucking Christ with the takes. That's his general demeanor on most things, but
respect.
Jesus fucking Christ with the takes.
Do you want to get into some Warriors takes? Yeah.
I mean, do we? I mean, what's it? I guess I let me ask you the question that I think a lot of people have been smoking their copium with over the last couple of days. Like, is this team, now that you know what it is, which is De'Anthony Melton, which is Buddy Hield in a sign and trade, which I am expecting to get done here and imminently, and slow-mo Kyle Anderson. Is this team better off without Klay Thompson and Chris Paul, both of whom they had in a position to garner some sort of value for? Mike Dunleavy Jr., the GM of the Warriors, did, and just waived one of them and kind of got fleeced in the sign-in trade on the other. Now, they had to do all of these things in order to get Melton, and then the trade exception turns into Hield and slow-mo. Like, are they better off today going into this season than if they were to have, in the scenario that would have been most likely, at least as I prognosticated it, just kept Klay and signed someone to a smaller mid-level exception?
I would say yes, especially defensively. If Melton's spine is intact, which I would hope that they vetted that before they signed him, but who knows? Maybe not. I do think the roster's better.
Rick Celebrini's been pretty busy, you know.
He has. Shout out Macklin.
He'll save us.
Genuinely, I cannot. Dieter and I are going to some.
We're amped
for down the line. We're stoked. Klay at this point in his career is basically a power forward.
Yes,
he cannot guard on the wings. Really, I think he's a decent post defender. Actually,
at no this one's stage. Putting him on the post. I mean, unless he's playing the five, what's it matter? Teams play five out, much less three out.
Right, but he's a net negative defender at this point, which is brutal.
Yep.
His shot, I think, you know, shooting numbers aren't that far off, but like vibe wise, and when you watch the games, like he's missing a lot of those shots where like they're just there, and a lot of them were in key moments. Where you're like, you bad gotta legs. Hit that shot. Yeah. And like consistently where you used to see Klay in those moments and think, not even think, you're like, that's going in.
Guaranteed.
And now you don't think it's going in. And so I know that's an oversimplification of his game. And I honestly hope the best for him.
Used to make the shots. And now he does not make the shots.
But, you know.
Which isn't entirely true. But yeah.
Right. But he's just been miserable, like even without the reporting that explicitly said like it's just been exhausting to, you know, his vibe sucks, like, and I want to see him have some sort of joy in his game again, because he's been such a joyful person for most of his career. I you know, at least outwardly. Listen, I think they are better off, and Chris Paul, like, I think he's a really good fit with the Spurs, and I think he did provide value for the Warriors. That said, I saw him at least once, sometimes twice, sometimes three times a game, get his pocket picked clean, dribbling the ball up the court genuinely every single game. And no one talked about it. And he's just dribbling up and someone goes, oh, I'm going to take that. And he goes, all right. And everyone's like, well, what do you mean? Like, we're accepting this.
It's the one thing you're supposed to not do.
I think I don't really trust. And this is as somebody who, like, I was wondering why they didn't use Pajemski more as just an actual point guard, and it's partially because they had Paul. We'll see. I do think they, you know, obviously they have a little ball handling with, and at least playmaking up top with Draymond and Kyle Anderson, sure. But in games that matter, like, you do need someone who can actually be a point guard. And look at the Suns. They didn't have someone who could just handle the ball and bring it up the court. And I think in most games, sure, Steph and Pajemski and whatever. But in teams that really decide to play defense, which, let's be honest, most of the season they say, all right, you can't really take it up the floor, but we're gonna let it happen. It's going to be a problem. And I do think, to me, I think another wing shooter and or point guard are things that they could use. And if they go and get Markkanen, which we're going to get to that in a sec, I'm not confident that they have a package that's going to be all that compelling unless they want to part with all of their picks. Thank you for that. I do think they're better off. I think if everyone's healthy, I think they, you know, have a good shot at skipping the play-in as like a maybe a five seed. I think that's possible. Do I think they're a championship contender? Absolutely not. And now, could they run into a situation where, you know, even if they don't get Markkanen, they swing a deal at the deadline for somebody because they're looking good? And, you know, like when the last time they won the championship, there were a lot of key injuries around the league and they sort of luck into an advantageous scenario. Mm-hmm. I think with Steph, you can't count any of that out. But as a long-winded way of answering your question, I do think they are better vibe-wise and just talent fit-wise in what they have.
Okay, let's run just quickly because I do believe that the operative the point of contention that is at large here is where do they fit in the hierarchy of the Western Conference? So let's just take the Thunder off the board. Yep. They're clearly number one. I think Minnesota is currently constructed, and Denver probably have to be considered number two, but I would argue both of those teams have taken a half step down. In Denver's case, maybe even a significant step down in losing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So they're a little weaker. Thunder are stronger. The Clippers are unquestionably weaker. They were the four seed.
Yeah,
they don't have Paul George anymore. James Harden's going to get his numbers. Good for fantasy basketball purposes. Bad for real basketball purposes.
I think they're. I don't want to buy any Clippers stock whatsoever.
I can make the argument that the Mavericks have gotten markedly better, and basically what they have done is they traded Tim Hardaway Jr., who was non-playable, for Klay Thompson, who might end up being non-playable, yep, but is more playable. That is in effect what they've done. They added Najee Marshall. Like, you can make the case that the Mavericks have taken a step forward.
Okay. In what they have, I think Klay is a great fit. And I think he knew that. I think he looked around. He's like, LeBron's like, please. He's like, stop being so desperate. Like, go play
maybe
with your
son. You guys
son.
Should use the 55th pick on somebody.
Right. Klay is doing the thing where he's like Shaq and Kobe, where they're both like, I kind of want to get one without him. And I have a chance of doing that here. So go on.
Is Klay Dwayne Wade era Shaq? Is that what's being alleged here?
Yeah.
Because Shaq did do that.
I know. No. I know.
Kobe but then Kobe did do that. Yeah. So who's the Paul Gasol? I guess Larry Markkanen is Paul Gasol in this scenario.
Sure.
The Phoenix Suns are the same, which isn't good. I'm just running through teams.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, let's phrase it this way. Are the Warriors better than the Memphis Grizzlies?
It's hard to answer that because are the Grizzlies going to be healthy? I don't know what the Grizzlies are. Like,
project out what you think the Memphis Grizzlies will be. Because obviously it's July 3rd. Everyone's going to hold you to these predictions.
I'm going to say the Grizzlies look to me like competing for a seven seed where if they hit it at the right time and Jaws just firing off.
So you think Grizzlies are no better than a play-in tournament team?
No. I'm saying they could potentially get up to like a 4-3 seed if all goes right for them. I don't think that's where they're going to end up.
The best case scenario for the Golden State Warriors, best case scenario for the Memphis Grizzlies, who has the better best case scenario?
I think the Grizzlies do, as it stands. I think they're younger.
It's just a thought exercise. Are the Warriors better than the Spurs? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Still.
They're better than the Jazz. Are they better than the Houston Rockets next year?
Yes.
Okay. Rockets were 41-41.
So there's like basically two ways to answer that question. Are they regular season better or are they when it matters better?
I'm talking strictly regular season. I'm just trying to figure out where the Warriors are going to finish in the West here, Jake. So are the Houston Rockets going to finish above, or maybe we can do over under, above or below the Golden State Warriors?
That's enough to say
above.
Yeah.
You're fighting it so goddamn hard.
When it comes to the regular season, youth, I think, is like the most important factor 100%. Because they are not jaded. They're not jaded. 100%. So, yeah.
Okay, you're taking Rockets above. Are we taking Grizzlies above?
No.
No. Okay. Sacramento Kings, above or below?
Below.
New Orleans Pelicans, lot in flux there, but they just added DeJounte Murray. Above or below?
Above.
Okay. Los Angeles Lakers.
Below.
Phoenix Suns.
In a tie, and then the Suns win the tiebreaker.
Okay. Above. Mavericks. Above. Clippers.
Yeah. Below.
Below. Timberwolves, Nuggets, and Thunder. So we have, above the Warriors, Thunder, Nuggets, Timberwolves, Mavericks, Suns, Pelicans, and Rockets.
So that puts the Warriors in
the seven or the eight seed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about right. That's the best case scenario.
I don't think that's the best case scenario.
What's the best
case? To me, that's the most likely. Best case scenario to me, you got Thunder. I don't think the Nuggets fall off, but I mean, I think they fall off, but I don't think they fall out of like the top four.
Yeah, they're still a 51 team.
Timberwolves, I think, are still up there. I think the Mavs will probably be the four seed. I think realistic best case scenario is Warriors finish in the fourth or fifth seed with, you know, like the Timberwolves having a vibe disaster and sort of falling off. Because again, Rudy Gobert is still on their team and Rudy Gobert is Rudy Gobert and he's Rudy Gobert.
Carl Anthony Towns is on that team. He doesn't have any shame.
Listen, the fact that they got that close, like, I don't think they're getting back there. I know that's a take. It depends on Anthony Edwards.
No, I agree.
And they've got pieces, but like, I will never buy into Gobert and Towns as your tandem. Like, Gobert's just getting cooked. Anyway, I think realistically, the Warriors' best case, if they were to get Markkanen, I think their best case is the three seed. Without him, I think absolute best case is some injuries ahead of them. They stay healthy and finishes the four, but realistic best case to me is like the five.
And then we know the worst case, it's the bottom out, but you think they're a rung or two higher on the ladder in the average scenario?
I think they're like likeliest given all of the, you know, Draymond can't deal with more bullshit, but I think given that Steph's going to miss probably a few games. He's getting older. He's got more on his shoulders every year.
Yep.
I think they're a 7-18.
Okay. I mean, it's still play-in tournament. Last year they were play-in tournament. They didn't even come close to sniffing the playoffs, and that was with an 8-2 finish. And I mean, they've won 46 games. And I know it's really fashionable to be like, hey, they could have won so many more. And it's like, well, if Draymond's not getting suspended, he's twisting an ankle. Or Steph is out here. I mean, Steph didn't have any room to play last year. What happens now when you don't have Klay Thompson? Sorry, but like folks ain't double teaming Buddy Hield. This team has a lot of nice role players. I really like a lot of their role players. They don't have a number two. And that was their big problem all of last year. They didn't have a number two. And no one stepped up. And Jonathan Kuminga tried to step up and we're all like, please sit down. We can't do this anymore.
I'm so not sold on Kuminga.
They're sold on him.
Like,
they're totally sold on him. They're about to give him $30 million a year, Jake.
That's good for him. Really good for him. Also, some of the contracts in the NBA are just, man.
It's bad.
Man.
It's bad. Well, yeah. Listen, people aren't watching as much, and so the money keeps going up. Doesn't feel like a bubble at all.
To me, I think the Warriors' avenue to actually get better, they need Pajemski to take a leap. I'm not sold that's going to happen. Like, they need him to take a leap.
High floor, low ceiling rookie. I can't see him turning into anything. When you say leap, you're talking about a guy who, like Andrew Wiggins, flirts with an all-star game. Right, like 15 points, 6 assists a game.
Yeah, I'm saying he needs to be a semi-consistent three-point shooter and be able to take the ball up the floor.
So you're basically saying he needs to turn into white Dante DiVincenzo from last year.
I mean, that would be fantastic for them. I think
it's a reasonable expect. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it happen. That Kuminga, has to happen because they don't have another backup winger. Yeah. Kuminga has to take a leap. This is as currently constructed, right?
Yes, this is currently constructed. Kuminga needs to, I want to say this judiciously, but he just needs to learn how to play.
Yeah.
Because I think it feels like when you watch him, sometimes he just goes coast to coast and he's like flowing with the game and he's just such a natural player. And then within the flow of the Warriors offense, he's like, what am I supposed to be doing? And then he gets confused and discouraged. And then they're like, all right, we're going to feed you. And then he's like, okay, let me overdo it and back into the post and take some terrible shots and then play myself off the court. And you're like, what is this guy? Like, I don't know what he is.
He's an athlete who doesn't know how to play basketball at a professional level yet.
Right.
I think Steve Kerr and him go head to head because Steve Kerr holds the professionalism standard much higher than the athleticism standard. And frankly, he should, given the systems the Warriors run. I mean, there's a lot of teams where Jonathan Kuminga would be out here giving you 27 a night on, 46% shooting and getting to do whatever he wants. And those teams would win 25 to 30 games a year.
Yeah, go hang out with Jordan Poole in Washington. See how well that team does.
I mean, Jonathan Kuminga is an unquestionably more talented player just because of the athleticism than a Jordan Poole. But there are places. Yeah. I mean, if Jonathan Kuminga, you throw him on the Portland Trailblazers right now, my God, would he cook? And my God, would that team get cooked night in, night out? That's not Jonathan Kuminga's fault. It's simply there's a limitation on the team output that is directly inverse with Jonathan Kuminga's output. Now, there's a threshold and a cutoff point, but the more you need Jonathan Kuminga, the worse you are. It's just where we're at today.
Yeah, I think with Kuminga, I look at him and I'm like, it's just so he has the athleticism that elevates it more from being a totally outdated type of player.
Right.
But he's not a good three-point shooter, and he's basically sized as a three. He plays the four, but he needs to live in the mid-range and doesn't stretch the floor sort of in the way you'd need to. So here's the thing. He's still super young, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah. He's 21, 22.
If you want it, but when you're buying into someone who's young, you're betting that they can eventually get it and expand their game in a way that will match. And if he can even just consistently become a three-point shooter from one spot on the floor and become a knockdown mid-range shooter consistently, that's great. If his defense can be just not falling asleep at the wheel. And sometimes he did flash really good defense last year.
No doubt.
There were some games I was really impressed. I think that potential is encouraging. But if he's your number two, you have a guy who doesn't have a consistent shot from outside, who is more of a scorer in transition. Now, if he's driving and getting you to the foul line and slow and learning how to slow his game down, the comp I made to you, and I know this is kind of wild, is Dwayne Wade.
Extreme.
I'm not saying he's going to be Dwayne Wade. I'm saying in terms of a guy who's sort of kind of like a shooting guard, really, but backs down in the post, Euro step, moves
a
in transition.
Slasher.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really what he should kind of be modeling his game after.
If we need a modern comp on who he should be modeling his game after, because Dwayne Wade's career faded out as the three-point shot rose in prominence.
Yep.
It's Aaron Gordon with Denver. And listen, I'll still knock Aaron Gordon plenty, but he is a premier defender in the league, someone who can guard inside and outside, someone whose offensive game was strange at best, even when Denver was starting to make a push. And when they finally got over the hump, it's because Aaron Gordon, as you noted, said, I can shoot this corner three. Anything above the break, I'm putting the ball on the floor. I'm keeping it flowing. I'm getting the ball to Nikola, or I'm getting the ball to Murray, or even Michael Porter Jr. out here, or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They had good players around him. But Aaron Gordon was the third best player, maybe fourth best player, depending on how you feel about KCP, or even Bruce Brown during that playoff run. Third best player on a championship team. Jonathan Kuminga, as it's currently constructed, would be the second best player or the second most important player offensively, yeah. defensively, the only real option given Andrew Wiggins' fall off as a two-way wing. The second most important player on a team that we agree is more likely play in tournament than top six seed,
yeah.
though certainly more likely play in tournament or top six seed than not making the playoffs. Like there's a yeah. plurality in play here. The most, the largest plurality is play in tournament. If we're just
right.
ranking it.
And I mean, Draymond is the second most important. I think Kuminga is the second most consequential. I know that's nitpicky.
Well, I mean, and we can get into that because yeah. let me just put it to you this way. Andrew Wiggins was the second best player on a title team in 2022. Are we getting into import and all these yeah. things? Like, yeah, okay, Draymond's the second most. Well, Draymond's getting benched right. in the NBA Finals. And Klay Thompson is you know having great games and terrible games and alternating sequence. Like all this, Andrew Wiggins might have only averaged 16 points per game in the NBA Finals. But you think about the series against Dallas. You think about the series against Denver. You think about you know that playoff run. He was the second most important player. If the Golden State Warriors are going anywhere other than where they've already been this past year, it's because Jonathan Kuminga has taken a leap and become the second most important player. But it's also now getting into a situation where you say, that would be incredible. But how effective is Jonathan Kuminga as a number two compared to the alternatives? If we're comparing him to DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, or Brandon Ingram, I'm totally fine with that. Because he's young, he still has room to grow, and their games, if we're making kind of strange comps, are similar, right? DeMar DeRozan's not giving you the three-point shot. He's not spacing yeah. the floor for Steph. Now, he can hold up a second unit for you while, you know, it's there. And by the way, I don't think DeMar DeRozan even has a mechanism to get here. Zach LaVine does. I don't like Zach LaVine as a basketball player. Yeah. Unless the Bulls want to give up some first-round picks.
Yeah, like, but Dieter, he only costs $48 million I know. For each of the next 3 years.
I know. And, you know, only the Bulls, baby.
Brandon Ingram is sort of the same.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's such a like desperation for the Warriors to get someone that I love when they get to someone like Zach LaVine, where you're like, that's objectively a bad move.
Yes.
But we should yeah. do it because it's someone. So anyway.
Well, continue. I mean, the constant need for new in the fan base is unbecoming. And this is, by the way,
yeah.
every fan base, every team, anywhere. This might even be an overall societal problem. Just the constant need for new. I'm not saying be regressive. I'm just saying don't constantly change shit, especially if it's not broken. And certainly don't change shit for the sake of changing shit. It's like a dopamine issue overall.
Yep.
And then, by the way, okay, you've done this new thing and the high goes away of the thing has been done. And now you're there like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do with the Zach LaVine? How's this supposed to yep. work? It's like, oh, great. It's Andrew Wiggins, but more expensive and less projectable. Hooray.
Yeah.
Can I bring up the Brandon Ingram thing? Because he's the one other name where I think people would get excited. I don't think they understand Brandon Ingram's game. And there's a reason that the New Orleans Pelicans are trying to move on from Brandon Ingram. One, he's just kind of an interesting cat. I don't say that with any malice or not a pejorative at all, but he's someone who goes to the beat of his own drum. He is a laid back dude. Also, he plays basketball the way that he wants to play basketball. And again, that's not a bad thing because he's an excellent basketball player. But at the same time, the Pelicans, you think about what their lineage is. David Griffin comes in, Swin Cash is the GM. But they have Willie Green as their head coach. He's coming from the Warriors tree. They run systems. Now, I know that sometimes the game entirely turns into Zion Williamson high pick and roll again and again and again. Willie Green's a pragmatist. But at the same time, they want to run offensive sets. They want to have motion off the ball. They want to be at least somewhat creative. This is not Dame Lillard and, you know, this is not Dame Lillard basketball. This is not what the Phoenix Suns run. This is not just a bunch of guys standing. This is not the Dallas Mavericks. It's not a lot of guys just standing around. Someone runs some action up top and everybody just hopes that the ball comes their way off that action. That's not how they want to operate. And that's understandable. And Brandon Ingram is like, what if though, anytime I get the ball, I just go to the mid-range And it's like, no one, it doesn't work for us. We have Jonas Valanciunas no longer, but we had Jonas Valanciunas in the paint. We have Zion Williamson in the paint. Don't go near the paint. There's not enough room for you and these guys in the paint. It's not an offense. It's a Brandon Ingram, get his plan. And Brandon Ingram's like, yeah, let's go with that one. I'm going to get mine. And he just did it. And then he kind of turn off whenever the game is just, yep. Well, I got mine. And I don't think he's a selfish player. I just don't know if he's capable of operating in a system. I've never seen him do it. He's not a defender. There's no two-way element to his game. And so you think about, okay, here your options as listed are John, you stick with the core or you stick with what you have. Jonathan Kuminga is your number two. With that, you are fraught with difficulties, but you have a tremendous amount of projectability. You could go and you can trade. You can, you know, I don't, again, let's leave DeRozan off the table. You can go and trade for Zach LaVine. Congratulations. You're now paying a guy more than $1 million per game to actively hurt your team. He'll get his points, but he's actively hurting your team. And then You're getting Brandon Ingram, where at least you can convince yourself like, hey, this might work. And he's super talented, but you're probably just getting Zach LaVine without the financial handcuffs. And then there's one other guy, 23, Salt Lake City, Lauri Markkanen. I'm not the biggest Markkanen fan. Now, this goes back to, you know, being a Bulls fan and having to watch the early days. And this is very much me still crying over spilled milk and drinking sour grapes. It's not his fault. At the same time, God damn, was it frustrating, and you can't get those emotions out of your body. Cleveland fans can attest to the same thing. God damn, was it annoying to watch this dude play basketball at times. He has figured it out. But let's be clear about what Lauri Markkanen is. He will never be a number one. If he's a number two, he is a bottom end number two. Okay? He's a number one on a Utah team that is exceptionally coached, in transition, won more games than they should have last year when Markkanen was playing. If he's a one, you're a lottery team. If he's a two, you're a low-level playoff team or a play-in team. And if he's your three, you're competing for championships. The Warriors would be asking him to be a two. That's fine. That's the scenario.
Yep.
Now you slide Kuminga down because he's not in any of these trade negotiations. I can report that firmly. They're not offering Jonathan Kuminga for Lauri Markkanen. It ain't happening. They're going to give up all the draft picks. They'll make the money work. You want Brandon Pajemski? Maybe. I mean, there's a conversation to be had there. They're not throwing in Kuminga for anything less than a true all-NBA player. So he's not part of the conversation. And now you go, okay, we have our one, Steph Curry. We have a guy who doesn't play much of any defense. Got to be clear about that in Markkanen. And he doesn't create off the dribble. He can drive every now and again, but he really doesn't create off the dribble. Doesn't create his own shot. He'll dunk off the dribble, but he doesn't create his own shot. He is a dead-eye three-point shooter. Yep. 40% last year. Catch and shoot as good as anybody in the league. And somebody who can put his ass in somebody and get you a bucket, which is not to be trifled with. He is somebody who fits next to Draymond Green, whereas Jonathan Kuminga does not. He doesn't. Now you have two non-shooters on the floor when you play Green and Kuminga together, which you need to do because they're two of your best players. If you put together Brandon Ingram at the three and you're playing Draymond at the five, so you're sliding Wiggins up to the four, congratulations. You now have two non-three-point shooters, even though Brandon Ingram's out there, and an Andrew Wiggins who doesn't want to shoot the three. And then you're probably getting Pajemski or Melton in there. And it's like, so when you're talking about scheme fit, Lauri Markkanen is the only option that works. I don't think he's a panacea to everything the Warriors have going on, but he is technically a number two, and he is the only number two of the available names that actually would fit what the Warriors are doing.
Right. So,
which I had to write a column this morning basically saying it's Lauri Markkanen or bust for Golden State.
Right. And so the position that puts you in is negotiating with Danny Ainge.
Correct.
Who, by the way, will probably get some better offers than
San what Antonio, Warriors... New Orleans, Sacramento are all in.
I don't think the Warriors are going to pull it off. I really don't. I think unless they say take truly all of our draft picks and other teams don't, which is possible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Warriors are in a position to give it all up. Now, as we talked about last time, we have the Mikal Bridges trade, which is a terrible rubric for the Golden State Warriors and makes Danny Ainge's life really easy because that was five first-round picks and a first-round swap. That was everything that the Knicks could do. The Warriors at this point, because of the Sepien rule, you can't actually trade first-round picks in back-to-back years. You have to have a first-round pick in an alternating year. They can trade. First-round pick 2025, first-round pick 2027, first-round pick 2029, first-round pick 2031. They can swap 2026 and 2028. There's five first-round picks right there. There is 2030. That was technically part of the Jordan Poole trade. It's protected into the top 20. There's a way to work around that. The Warriors can go four first-round picks and three first-round swaps, and that's probably what it's going to fucking take.
That's
because San Antonio's loaded. San Antonio's loaded, and if they want to play the game, they can. I will say there's one advantage that the Warriors have in this scenario. Lowry Marketing can basically do what I don't know any European player has done before in the history of the NBA, which is say, I'm not signing your massive contract extension offer. Trade me to another team.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm missing somebody. I am certain I'm missing somebody. But when you have a European player, whether that is someone from Greece, whether that's someone from Germany, whether it's someone from France, whether it's someone from Finland like Lowry Markkanen, when you have a European player, for some reason, we can maybe figure it out down the line on a different show, when you put the big offer in front of them, they say thank you, and they sign it, and they're very happy. Meanwhile, every kid who came up in the AAU system in America is like, nah, this is about more than that. And it's like, I'm pretty sure it's not about more than $245 million there, buddy. But, you know, what you do you. All guaranteed, by the way. So if the Utah Jazz decide they don't want to extend Lowry Markkanen, if Lowry Markkanen, which would be out of character if I'm stereotyping, decides he does not want to re-sign with the Utah Jazz, now there's a little bit of leverage, and now it just comes down to not what can the Jazz extract, but what can the Jazz get, because it is a distressed asset. And if I'm Mike Dunleavy Jr., who has at best been fine during this process, at best, I am working Lowry Markkanen's agent like crazy to get him to demand a trade to Golden State specifically, but in general.
Tamper like a psychopath.
Take the second round losses. Hell, you what? Oh, no, we lost the second round. We already lost all our second round, but we've already lost our draft picks.
No, but
who cares
Peter,
about
they have a 2025 worse of the 76ers and the Nuggets.
No, I mean, it's like,
pick, so that's
it's now, I guess there is a larger question to be had, which is, Steph Curry's got 2 years left on his contract. Draymond Green has 2+1. Steve Kerr has 2 years left on his contract. The Warriors are in a position to where I think the expectation is that Steph and Dre will exit together. Steph would re-up at a reasonable rate, LeBron style. You know, well, that wasn't terribly reasonable, but you know, if the you know, he would handle it the same way LeBron has handled it, which is a no loss to him. Hey, I'll take a pay cut if you can get me X, Y, or Z. It's your fault if you can't execute on that. And if you can't execute on that, I'll take my full load of money. Brilliant play by LeBron James and Rich Paul. And I would imagine that Steph, if he wanted to continue to play, could do something like that. I don't think he'll ever wear a jersey other than the Warriors. I think it is more important to him than it was to Clay, clearly, because Clay just left. One would hope, in that there is still, you can mitigate some of the effects of these draft picks being traded the longer Steph Curry plays, but at some point Steph Curry will stop playing and go join the PGA Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour.
Or he just gets older quickly.
Yeah.
Because he's working relentlessly. And even though he keeps his body in better shape than any player in the NBA, probably.
Yep.
If they just don't have another ball handler, and really Steph is what should be, is kind of a shooting guard, but
if we're being honest, they lack an actual point guard. They don't have anyone who can just run the goddamn point. It's Draymond Green, Steph Curry, slow-mo Pajemski right. and Melton to a degree.
Right. And it's less, so, oh, the second unit needs another ball handler. To me, it's you really want a guy who can take some of the onus off Steph having to take it. And Draymond does that to some extent. Once they,
I mean, the Warriors' second unit has always been best when they've had a point forward. Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala. I mean, that's been their best.
That's what slow-mo is. That's what slow-mo is like in an extent. Like, I think what they see in slow-mo is like an off-brand Draymond to just sort of be an adult in the room a little bit.
And yeah, I think it's more of an Andre Iguodala. It's it's fair. Fine. I mean, he's an outstanding player and been first team all beater for a long time. I'm not in any way knocking the slow-mo thing, but if you are deliberately saying that he's your point guard for the second unit, it's a lot different than having Sean Livingston, who was a point guard, but obviously had the body of a wing. Right. It's a lot different than having Andre Iguodala out there doing it because, listen, I don't think there's anything preventing teams from actually checking the full 94 feet in the regular season. They don't do it. But if you wanted to have ball pressure, if Davion Mitchell decides in a game against, you know, Warriors and the Kings, he decides he wants to check ball the whole way down the court just because, I don't think I want slow-mo bringing it up. Just throwing that out there.
No, and I'm not talking about the bringing rest it up.
I'm looking at the – well, that's – that. I know it's a simplistic way of looking at it, but like really in the Warriors offense, that's what a ball handler is supposed to do. Who's bringing the fucking ball up the floor? And then we initiate the offense because the offense is typically run through the block, the high point, something to that effect. So the point guard doesn't carry as much weight as it does when you're just running high pick and roll every play. At the same time, someone has to bring the ball up the floor and they have to be able to do it within 8 seconds to get across half court. And the man's nickname is slow-mo. You check him, I'm not sure he's getting past the line in 30 seconds. You know, like he'll dribble it a lot and he'll just Bob Cousy fundamentals his way down by backing somebody. Like I need to look into it a little bit because my recollection is that's not something I want in life and it's not something that's tenable. Now, maybe they can get away with it. But again, it seems like a pretty easy small game tweak on defense to just say like, hey, make the slowest, most deliberate guy on the floor slower and more deliberate because there's a time constraint at play here. Even if he has, I think you want him in the high post. I think you want him in the block initiating the offense with the second unit as well. So they do need a point guard. That's something that's just going to have to happen on the biannual exception, which is $4.7 million or a minimum contract. I'm fine with that. I guess what I'm asking amid all of that is if you add Markkanen into the fold, if you give up the boatload of picks, one, what does that do for you today? What does that do for the Warriors if we were playing the over-under game under these circumstances? What teams, they're better than the Suns in that scenario, right? So now we're talking 4 or 5 seed. We're talking top 6 presumed as opposed to top 6 desired. Okay. What does that do for the team's future?
Not ideal. Here's the thing. This is like the whole conversation, and I don't want to say Mike Dunleavy's done a great job because I don't believe that, but I want to like address the fact that there's so much frustration with Joe Lacob and everything the Warriors have done, and there's this crazy sentiment. And I'm not someone who will defend billionaires. I am never been on the side of billionaires. But Joe Lacob has spent historic amounts of money consistently to fund this team into the tax. And yes, they're also raking it in. But like a lot of billionaires refuse to do that. They invented rules. They invented all of this apron bullshit because Joe Lacob was spending so much money.
Well, And Steve Ballmer.
Right. And Steve Ballmer. But like the backlash that like Lacob is this cheap owner who's like not supporting the team is insane to me. Again, I'm not going to like ever fetishize billionaires. I think a lot of people do that with like Elon and it's disgusting and pathetic. But objectively speaking, Lacob has funneled tons of money into this team and they didn't make the playoffs last year. And so from a business perspective, they went, okay, we're not going to do that again because this team is looking washed. And so let's reroute. Let's see what we can do. And listen, you can argue, you know, about Poole and that trade for Chris Paul. The fact is, Jordan Poole's contract is an albatross and they got off it. And
they signed I'm not saying
right.
It's their fault.
But they also recognized, oh shit, we made a huge mistake. And rather than holding on to it and making things potentially worse, they said, let's get the fuck out of here because this is a bad move. And they did. And so that's not to excuse it and say, oh, what a fantastic move they made, bringing in Chris Paul and getting nothing for him. They probably should have had something lined up that was like a piece that had some value, even if it's just Chris Paul. It didn't work out, whatever. It deserves criticism. But they also got off this terrible contract that they, at least as mature adults, recognized was a bad contract, which I think is a rational way to approach it. Klay Thompson,
I'm with you.
They recognized best years behind him. He's not really a fit for us anymore. He wants out.
Yeah.
They're not getting a haul for him, but they didn't get nothing. They brought in a useful wing who's an adult in the room in Slo-Mo. And if they get the Buddy Hield deal done, that's a shooter for cheap. His best years are behind.
A poor man's Klay. He was unplayable in the playoffs for the 76ers.
Didn't play him, and there's an argument that they should have had him out there more, and they got...
played him, it all went to hell. I mean, it was a very clear delineation of like, oh, Buddy Hield's in, game's over. Buddy Hield last year on his
career low, second, yeah, almost career low.
Oh, yeah, no, and, I mean, listen, the Indiana Pacers dumped his ass. They dumped his ass for second round, like they salary dumped him mid-season and got better. Okay. Now they also added Pascal Siakam, but still they said we can do without Buddy Hield. In fact, we love playing Obi Toppin, which is a decision that I can never rationalize, but here we are. Buddy Hield last year, offensive E-Raptor. It's just an advanced stat. I don't name this stuff. The other ones are LeBron. The acronym's LeBron. It's a good stat, but it's like E-Raptor 0.9 plus 0.9 defense, minus 0.7. So he was a absolutely average player at bat. I mean, he was a net 0.2, 3.3 win player last year. Slo-Mo was a 3.3 win player last year, about a 1 overall on the Raptor. And Melton, I mean, Slo-Mo was a plus 2 defense, minus 1.3 offense. He averaged 6 points per game last year. Maybe his style of play doesn't resonate with the advanced statistics, but he wasn't good on offense. We got to be clear about that.
Both those still guys were in decline objectively last
year. No doubt. Melton, whose back might be fucked beyond repair and whatever, missed half of the year, 0.8 on the offense, plus 0.8. He was an excellent three-point shooter. He was the sixth worst shooter of two-pointers in the NBA last year. It's an unbelievable
stat. I wouldn't say an excellent three-point shooter, but...
He shot 40% from beyond the arc. He was a good three-point shooter. He was a plus 2.5 on defense. He is an elite perimeter defender. And he makes Gary Payton II immediately expendable. Like, which elite perimeter defender is going to get injured this year? I guess you'll just alternate between the two if you keep him. At some point, one of them has to be
healthy, right? He shot 36% from deep last year.
Why do I have it as 40? Doesn't matter. He was a very good three-point
shooter. He shot 39% the year before. Okay. But yeah, he's usually decent.
He was plus 3.4 on the E-Raptor. He was apparently a 3.4 war player. So that's just the basis of, hey, you didn't play enough games.
He's a solid player if he's healthy.
Chris Paul was a 3.8 win player last year. He was 3.8. He was plus on offense, plus on defense. Again, these stats don't mean everything, but he was a plus 1.9 player. Klay Thompson was effectively the exact same as Buddy Hield. He was plus 1.4, minus 1.2 offensive defense. Made him a net 0.2 rated player. He was a 3.4 win player. So Buddy Hield is your Klay Thompson replacement. Slo-Mo is your defense option in that spot. And then you add Melton, who in theory can kind of fill in where Gary Payton II was supposed to fill in, even though they technically played different positions because Gary Payton's... if you squint right, you look at this and you say this is an upgrade. If you squint right. Now, the flip side of that is if you bring in Markkanen was 13th in offensive output last year. Okay? That's good because he's not a good defender. Minus 0.6. He was a 6.5 win player. This guy is reasonably the last viable number two. And I keep a very tight list on number ones. This guy is reasonably the last viable number two. He's not a two-way player. He is offensively, he wasn't even the best offensive player on his team last year. That'd be Colin Sexton. If we were just going down the list, Jokic 7-3, SGA 7-1, Embiid 7, Giannis 6.3, Luka 6, Kawhi 5.7, Halliburton 5.6, Brunson 5.5, Kyrie 5.3, Sexton 4.8, stunned me. LeBron 4.7, Spida Mitchell, hate that nickname, 4.6. He just re-upped. And then Lowry Markkanen after that. You don't really have a choice but to do it. You don't have a choice but to do it.
Yeah.
So if Danny Ainge asks for them all, you give them all.
I mean, yeah. You do have a choice, and that's if you really believe Kuminga can take a monstrous leap and you can maybe get another piece. The answer is to both, no.
I mean, what's the other piece? And, I mean, the other thing you have to think about here, too, is like they're hard capped twice. They're hard capped at the first apron. They can't bring in a lot of salary without moving out a lot of salary, and that means moving out Wiggins, which, frankly, you need all the pieces you can get.
Agreed. Listen, I'm with you. I think he's the only real option they have. The other alternative is to run it out with what you have and say, we are going to pretend this is good enough and lie to everyone and say, well, we got some nice little pieces. We can make a move and maybe wait till the trade deadline and try and maneuver there for cheaper and see then if you are at least healthy enough or competitive enough and can avoid some of the mortgaging of your future when Curry will either be gone or in decline and you will mostly be irrelevant and be desperate for draft picks. So that's, I think, the sort of flaccid alternative that you can offer. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Markkanen's the only guy where you go, okay, now I can take them semi-seriously, right?
And I mean, I'll note, you can say, hey, Kuminga needs to take a step up. If you were legitimately building the ideal Jonathan Kuminga, you're asking him to do the Lowry Markkanen impression on offense because that's what this team needs. They need someone who can pop the shot from distance. If you're going to play Draymond, then you have to have a four or five if they're alternate. But if you're going to play those two guys in the front court, you need someone who can space the floor. You can only have one non-shooter on the floor. So when you play Jonathan Kuminga and Draymond Green together, congratulations, you're losing. I don't care how good those two guys can be. If you have Markkanen on the floor, yes, you're defensively limited, but at least you're four out. And so there's something to be said on that.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Who is your top number two in the league? Because I have an answer for you. That's...
The best one and two.
Just your top two, tier two player, not your top one, your top two in the league.
I mean, I think you can make the argument that it's Kyrie. I think Anthony Davis, when he's on, has a very good argument for being a clear number two. Tyrese Maxey's there. Which New York Knick are you trying to log jam into?
No. It's not a New York. It's Jason Tatum. That's what I was getting at.
Richest man in the NBA, Jason Tatum. Good.
Best number two in the league.
I'm going to pivot to this very ham-fisted question. Would the 49ers be better off without Brandon Ayuk?
No.
No. Okay. There it is.
that's really good. I mean, I guess I'm with you on Kyrie being.
No. I think that you have to go to the champions. I'm not a big Tatum. I think is, I don't know. Boston's built different. Boston has big 2007 Pistons vibes all over them. Whereas like the power of friendship overtaking.
I mean, they're a little, their best two are a little higher than that, you know?
Hugh Wilkins coming in, asking would we be more willing to trade Kuminga than the Warriors are? That's an emphatic yes from me.
Yes for me also, just briefly. I think the Knicks currently are much more power friendship than the Celtics.
Listen,
much more like the Pistons.
I don't disagree that the friendship might be stronger with the Knicks, but the power is certainly more prodigious with the Celtics. They just
won. That's fair. Yes, won. Hugh, I would be more willing to trade Kuminga than the Warriors seem to be.
Not for Markkanen, though. I want to be pretty clear about that. Like, I would not trade him for Markkanen. And then we get into the issue of, well, who's actually available for Jonathan Kuminga? And I'd trade...
Because you Nobody. Know what, you know what, honestly, in my opinion, be the best move for them?
What's that?
Is I would get Markkanen, and then I would flip Kuminga in a separate deal, try and get like a wing shooter, something, and picks, like a veteran wing shooter. I know that's like maybe not the most logical move.
Well, but when we talk about like the future of the Warriors, I mean, when Steph and Draymond leave, now you have, let's say, a 30 to 31 year old Lauri Markkanen and a 25 to 26 year old Jonathan Kuminga. Like, is that the best thing in the world? No, but at least it's something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're not,
you want to hold on to them.
You're not totally bottoming out because you don't have any draft picks. So you can move, you know, maybe Kuminga has made that leap and now he's this guy. Well, now you can maybe turn him. Now he's your anchor. I don't see that happening, but maybe he's your anchor and now you can build around him with the free agency money, you know, the money that you'll have in free agency. Or maybe you say, hey, actually, we can take Markkanen and turn him into two players, just like they just did with Clay. They just turned him into two players. Neither of them particularly excellent on their own, but, you know, maybe their power of friendship comes together and there's something worthwhile there with Buddy Hield and Slow-Mo, which, by the way, they have to lose both Paul and Clay in order to get Melton because of the kind of mid-level exception he signed to. Not sure why he was worth $12 million on this market. I understand he's an elite perimeter defender. I would have waited it out a little bit. Here we go.
Right. What I would also say is, and I think from the Warriors' perspective, I do get it, is after 2 years, that's basically when you're like, okay, we've got Kuminga and then whatever Steph and maybe Draymond have left, but it's really that. And still Pajemski and Jackson Davis, they're still around. Maybe Pajemski's taking a leap, probably still just a pretty decent player, in my opinion.
The brilliance, if we have to give credit to Mike Dunleavy Jr. for anything here, it's that he did a very good job in drafting guys for the team that they had last year. Right? He got two rookies that could come in and play a role. That is an exceptionally rare thing. But in order to do that, you're selling out at the positions they were drafting, you're selling out on projectability. You're selling out on upside. I do think that there's more to offer with Brandon Pajemski, and I think there's more to offer with Trayce Jackson-Davis. I don't think there's a lot more to offer with either of them. This is refinement, not leaps. You know, this is fine-tuning, not jumps.
Although if Pajemski, genuinely, one of my favorite shots in the league that is incredibly inefficient, the running hook, I love it. Just because that's my game, I love it so much. And if he can, I'm just baffled that no one in the league that is tall as shit is taking hook shots. Like, learn how to do it. You're tall. Stop trying.
Can you imagine if Joel Embiid, who can't jump, just decided to take hook shots every time?
Unless you're Wemby, stop taking people off the dribble. Like, and even
actually, I've seen Wemby do a hook shot. Yeah,
I know, and he does it. And he does it from 26 feet away, and it goes in.
It might. He's an alien. I think we need to be honest here. It might be over. Like I'm not even talking about it. Just every other team. Like, that guy is so good.
Oh yeah.
I just saw
a video of him playing with Gobert, and I'm like,
when he was a kid.
As much as no, just like today,
like on the French national
for France,
team?
Where I'm like, as much as I hate Gobert, that is brutal to try and go up against.
Steve Kerr is going to be like, what if
we
put a bunch of 6'5" guys on the floor at the same time?
What I wanted to say, to get back to with the Warriors' thought process, is as much as I'm okay with trading Kuminga, and I actually really do want to see where he goes, because I do think there's plenty of room to grow. I'm just not confident he's ever going to be a three-point shooter. Like, if he can even be like a 36, 37.
Well, I mean, Let's be clear about his best case scenario. It's Pascal Siakam, right?
Yeah.
Valuable player.
Best case is a little higher because he's more athletic than Siakam's longer, but I think he's a little more athletic than Siakam is. At least, I mean, Siakam's a good athlete, but
Siakam, his game's changing. Aaron Gordon. I mean, is there
I'd have to think about it, but what, like, when it gets to 2 years down the line and Steph probably re-ups on one of those 1+1 where he's getting 60 plus 65 and,
well, I mean, Draymond. Again, I'm not entirely sure that's how that will go. And that's way too far down the line to
project. But you can reasonably say, okay, by then Kuminga's just 23. Mm-hmm. We're going to says, I'm good. I'm going to go hang out. I'm going to go read the news. And you know, all the other stuff. Yeah. But you can bring in a new coach and say, okay, let's actually create a system that actually fits Kuminga's skill set a little bit better and start this thing from scratch. Cause there's an argument, if he continues developing, that at that point when he's 23 and you bring in a new coach and you say, all right, we're going to redo this whole thing, you can create a different system that isn't what the Warriors have been running, but does work better for him. Mm-hmm. And I think Lacob is maybe thinking, okay, how can we go like this, just flatten out a little bit and just keep it here. Just keep it on the level.
They have to pay the mortgage there. I mean, I think they're in fine fiscal shape, but like they can't not have people in that building. And as much as, you know, going back to the Bulls, like the Bulls have ridden for 25 years off of the legacy of Michael Jordan, and they still, for some reason, fans there fill the building when they're being given a consistently mediocre product, and it encourages more mediocrity. Like, my concern for the Warriors is that that's what happens here, that they ride the coattails of Steph Curry into two decades of mediocrity where they're just good. They basically turn into every team in Major League Baseball, save for three, where they're like, what if we all went 81-81 and saw what happened? And that's how the Bulls operate. They're like, play-in tournament sounds like fun as hell. Maybe we get to host a game. I don't think that will happen. And it's not the Warriors side that I'm giving deference to. I'm giving deference to the fan base. I think they'll check out. Now there's the whole thing about PSLs, personal seat licenses, and if they are allowed to check out and what that would cost and all this. And that is predatory stuff that we'll get into some other time. But
can't wait.
But the Bay Area has shown time and time again, it does not give a fuck about mediocrity, and it certainly doesn't care about losing. The favorite, I get asked this all the time, like, who do you think the most popular team in the Bay Area is? And my answer is pretty unequivocal. Whichever team is best. And I'm not saying that as like, what a bunch of bandwagoners. No. When the fans in the Bay Area are in, they're all the way in. Unlike any other, as strong as any other fan base in the nation, without question. The second you give them a reason to do anything else, they're out. This is an all or nothing premise. You do not get the level of casualness on the fans is very high because we have other options. It's expensive as shit. I can go for a hike. I can do a million other things.
Yeah.
You know, we're technologically savvy. We don't have to go to the game. We can watch it on television. You know, like, it's not, there's not in a lot of places, that's all you have to do. Just be clear about that. Shout out Cleveland, Ohio. You know, there's no winter. Oh no, it rains a little bit.
Very good point. Yeah.
So when the Warriors were the best team, they were the sole focus of everyone. When the Giants were the best team, they were the sole focus of anybody. When the 49ers are the best team, they're the sole focus of everybody. And the really good times is when you have multiple options going on at the same time. Okay, that's the fun times. 2022 for, you know, actually it turned 49ers and then it shifted to Warriors because no one thought the Warriors were going to win it in 2022. And the Niners are out here. And it's like, hey, you know, maybe they can come back from that shitty 2020 season. And then, you know, they get hot at the end, the Deebo Samuel NFC Championship game. We all know what happened. But like, that was an easy transition. The favorite team in the Bay Area is the one that's giving you the most reason to pay attention. And the tolerance for giving that attention is exceptionally high. You got to earn it. So if the Warriors want to lock in mediocrity just so that they can continue to sell $20 beers and $800 seats at Chase Center so that they can continue to pay their bills, more power to them. I'm telling you right now, outside of contractual obligations, people ain't buying it. They're not going to buy it. Not when you have the 49ers, who are still good and probably should be good for a long time yet, so long as they have the head coach and quarterback. The Giants are the Giants. yeah, not with Macklin Celebrini giving people a reason in the South Bay to stay in the South Bay with their entertainment dollars. They haven't had a reason in a long time. Now they have one. Full stop.
Macklin Celebrini's got me on watching you weird YouTube clips shot.
I'm sending them to you. Let's be clear here.
You're sending them to me, but then I'm going down the rabbit hole and I'm going, God damn.
Oh, this guy. What sweet mitts. Wow, and not when, terms. By the way, Joe Lacob's about to bring in another basketball team into the market. And
where they have like already promised to win a title within 5 years before they even exist.
Go big or go home.
Which tells you all you need to know, right?
Go big or go home. So if the Golden State Warriors want to just say Jonathan Kuminga is our future, and we're just going to see where this takes us, I can tell you where it's going to take you. Know where you actually want to go. And I'm not saying it has to be championship or bust, but you have to give folks out there a reason to think you can win a championship. To think you can win a championship. And this team, as constructed right now, gives no one any belief that they can win a championship. I saw the odds today. I can't believe how high the Warriors are in the odds. I can't believe it. Because no one in their right mind last year looked at that Warriors team and said, you know, maybe they can do it. Maybe they can do it. And they are, at best, the most favorable interpretation, slightly better. Slightly. Yep. They're the 9 seed instead of, they're hosting that game with the Sacramento Kings instead of getting their fucking tires ripped off. Yeah. At the Golden 1 Center. That's the best case scenario as currently constructed. We get Lauri Markkanen, there's a whole different conversation.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Okay. Okay. Do we have anything else we want to talk about?
No. If you got dogs tomorrow, drug them up. You know, make sure, this is more a reminder to myself. To pack my dog's Thunder
Vest. You're going to watch this later and be like, oh man, I know I forgot something. Let me listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Put his Thunder Vest on, get him some drugs. He's already looked like he's drugged himself right now. And you know, watermelon, make sure you get 2. I've gotten 2 enormous ones from Costco because if I have a bad watermelon, it might ruin the day. So I can't tolerate that. So I got 2 enormous ones that have been just sitting in the chair in my room like a child, really just on display. And then, you know, grill
really,
it up.
Really adhering to the 1 is none and 2 is 1 principle, but only with watermelon.
Yeah, it's important. It's important. And then, you know, hydrate.
What kind of vodka are you filling also, that watermelon with?
Well, what I'm actually making are caipirinhas, which
okay,
are,
talk to me.
For those of you who are... have a BevMo membership. I don't know if you need, it's not a membership. It's just, you need to give them a card and that, whatever, but go to BevMo, get yourself some cachaça. Cachaça. It is a Brazilian liqueur made from a sugarcane plant. I don't know what you compare it to. Basically what you do is you take a lime, you cut out a little pithy part in the middle. You cut off the skin, slice it down the back, and then you put like a tablespoon of sugar into a drink mixer, you muddle that up so it mixes. Then you put some ice in there. You pour however much cachaça. Don't ever measure, just eyeball it. Put it in there, shake it up, pour it in. Basically, what you've got is like a Brazilian margarita with 3 ingredients. And sure, if you have a bunch of them, you're going to have a headache from all the sugar, but they are delicious. So, so refreshing. And I'll be drinking those this weekend.
By the way, I just wanted to acknowledge this from Monty Watts. I love the Toffoli signing. I have no problem with the Sharks overpaying anyone they need to get to a salary floor.
Mercenary, baby.
And Celebrini is absolutely leaving BU. I know that they're pretending that he won't. He will. That's aggregated. I'm telling you right now, he's gone. It's been decided. It's not of concern. The Sharks have no concern whatsoever that Macklin Celebrini is going back to BU.
Now they have a situation where they might still suck. For a couple of years while this develops, people are still going to show up. Like, It's great.
I'm excited to see him. And by the way, it's not going to be smooth sailing in the least bit. It is. Whew, he's got his work cut out for him as a young 18-year-old, but he is close to a perfect hockey prospect. I mean, legitimately, like Connor Bedard is a generational player. He was the guy who went one the year before to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Connor Bedard.
I had not acknowledged how great of a Chicago accent Connor Bedard is. But Connor Bedard is not the all-around player that Macklin Celebrini is. Connor Bedard is an all-time scoring possibility, like a guy who, I mean, the best equivalent would be a Patrick Kane, who used to play for the Blackhawks and just scored goals in bunches. He can get 500 goals. He can dish out 700 assists. He can have 1,000 points in his NHL career. He's that kind of offensive player. He is not the kind of 200-foot two-way center, three-zone center, that wins you a Stanley Cup. There are still a few of those, but I mean, listen, Connor McDavid had one of the most exceptional Stanley Cup playoffs of all time. He was excellent in the defensive zone. Leon Draisaitl is a 200-foot center. Edmonton had two. Florida had one in particular in Sasha Barkov, who is as good a defensive center as exists in the league. You think about the Stanley Cup champions in recent years, you have a 200-foot center. They need to be somebody who you can put out on the penalty kill, someone you can put out on the power play, someone you want when you're matching up lines, somebody who can get you 30 goals a year, maybe 70 assists. There's a very clear archetype for what you need. Macklin Celebrini fits that archetype. So
can't wait.
I'm amped to watch it. The ups and the downs. And I would like
it. Up.
Yeah. I would like it if on the days that the Sharks aren't playing, the Golden State Warriors gave me something to talk and write about. That's what I would like.
Yep.
But this is where my priorities lie today on July 3rd. Jake, I would also, I got to ask, have you finished The Bear season 3?
Season 5. I'm through episode 5. Episode 5, I talked to our boy Danny Emmerman about it. He was down here just hanging out.
Did Danny love it? Is he loving it?
No, we have the same take. I can sort of feel where it's going, and it feels what he told me is it was supposed to be a 3-season arc, and they said make it 4. And so that to me explains a lot of they're wasting some time. It both feels too fast and way too long. And I don't feel like I'm going anywhere. I'm excited. I've heard good things about episode 6. Ayo Edebiri directed it. So I'm stoked. It went from possibly like having the potential to be my favorite show of all time to halfway through the season, me knowing for a fact it doesn't have the potential to be that anymore. I've accepted that. I hope they can round it out at the end of the season a little bit and season 4 be coherent. Just stop trying to do 17 mini character arcs and do the thing where you just stay with one or two characters and it flows, and make the episodes like an hour. If you want to give yourself the fucking time to like flesh out these arcs, Lord knows you're doing AliExpress commercials anyway with David fucking Beckham. I'm sick of it. The commercials are outrageous.
You have commercials on Hulu?
Yes. The commercials on Hulu now are insane for The Bear, because clearly they're paying a premium.
I'm paying the premium to avoid it.
AliExpress is like doing fast fashion, offering commercials with David Beckham. David Beckham, you really need the money. Don't ever buy from AliExpress. Like, go thrift shopping, you pieces of shit. I know things are expensive, but don't buy from AliExpress. The world is already bad enough. That is my rant, and I think that's a good place to stop.
Yes, it is. We'll get your full
AliExpress season. Will not be sponsoring us.
Yeah, thanks for ruining the one group of people who would give out money in this day.
They're about to cut us a check.
This has always been a Temu podcast. I mean, both in theory and in practice, a Temu level sports analysis. I'm leaving.
Not Temu Solani. Did I pronounce that right?
God, that would be incredible. Great left one. All right, bye.
I know a little hockey. Not much. A little bit.
You done?
No. Let's go. Let's fuck off.